It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 7th of May 2011. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It comes to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12, with the interviews repeated on Wednesday nights at 7pm and Thursdays at 12:30pm. They're also available as a podcast at www.waihekeradio.org.nz. On Saturday the 7th of May, Sharon Brown talked politics with journalist specialist Greg Treadwell, and she spoke to Nio from Waiheke Library.
So we're very lucky. We've got Greg Treadwell in to talk to us today, and he's the ex-editor of the Gulf News and now works at AUT in communication, is that right?
Yeah. I'd like to just say how amazing it is that the White House has been transformed into the new premises for Waiheke Radio, and congratulations to all those amazing volunteers who worked so hard up here to keep the station going. And these new premises are everything you deserve.
Great. Oh, well, that's great. I have to say, we're really enjoying them. They're so light and bright, and it's so lovely to be able to have a meeting in the station, because, you know, there are quite a lot of volunteers at the station, and it's all, we're always, you know, struggling to find a place where we can meet or communicate with each other, and it's proving to be quite a nice focus. There's a nice outdoor area, and we're hoping that, you know, people from the community will now be able to stop in and, you know, say hello and stop by with a bit of news, or, you know, just come and sit here for a bit, or, you know, I think it would be really nice to open it up as a space that people can come and enjoy with us, because after all, it is community radio. So, you know, the more people come in and join us and share the news with us, the better it all is.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And it is owned by the community, and you guys have done a great job with it. And in terms of meetings, I just walked in here 5 minutes ago, and over in one of the rooms in the corner of the building, there's an incredibly important meeting going on full of radio people. So I was quite scared by that. But
yes. Yeah, well, we are very important. We like to think that.
Very, very influential indeed.
So lovely. Anyway, thanks for coming in. Been a big week for New Zealand politics. That's why I thought it would be nice to get you in. I mean, we've got a new party, the Mana Party.
Yeah, and I don't know if one person makes a party. no, that's not fair. He does have a lot of backing, and particularly from Hone Harawira, of course, we're talking about, and Hone's got quite a lot of backing from some of the old guard in the left, on the left in New Zealand politics. So Matt McCartan's quickly shuffled in behind him, understandably, and those sorts of people. A new party on the scene. Very interesting. And a division, if you like, a division within the Maori sector of parliament.
Mm. And are you surprised that these other people have got in behind him? I mean, there's Sue Bradford, who's quite interested in what he's doing. There's John Minto.
No, to be perfectly honest, I think ideologically, the Mintos and the Bradfords, who have worked tirelessly, often cast as radical outsiders, but often not, and not really coming from a very different place than a lot of other people. But no, I'm not surprised, because Hone Harawira comes himself from that from a background of activism and protest. And I think they're pretty natural bed partners, to be honest. And I think Hone is pretty aware that if he can get a reasonable support from the general left, if you like, rather than the Maori left, then he's going to swell his support pretty quickly. I think he's obviously he's a politician working for Maori, and particularly up north at Taitokerau, but he's he has a leftist view of the world, and I think he fits very well with the Mintos of the world, to be honest.
Mm. So you mentioned him in connection with the Maori. Is that where you think his primary base is going to be? Is it really fragmenting the Maori party, or do you think he'll have a broader base support?
Well, I mean, I think he's looking for that broader base support. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. But I don't think he's going to do that much damage to the Maori party in the long run. But we'll have to see. I think Peter Sharples has been quietly furious all week. I think he's pretty disappointed in this idea that Hone can have a by-election because he feels like one. Now, that's not my personal view. I think Hone Harawira has every right to force a by-election in Taitokerau if that's how he sees it. A lot of people wouldn't agree with me, but I'll probably go with Hone on this one, when, you know, what price democracy and all that.
Especially as if they get a seat there, they're more likely to get in to the next election. So it's quite strategic, really.
Well, it is. Yeah, that's going to be the challenge, of course, is to... I don't think it's going to be that hard to win Taitokara, which means Manapati could quite easily be in Parliament.
Mm. So what do you think this means for New Zealand politics generally? Is it just like a little blip, or is it of any kind of significance, do you think? Or it's too early to say?
Well, what I think is really interesting is that on the left we have this Manapati rising, and on the right we have the ACT Party and a storming coup by who else than none other than Don Brash, who's returned from political obscurity and now looks effectively, in my view, Brash has bullied his way back into the consciousness of New Zealanders. And I mean, Roger Douglas has been frighteningly quiet, and what a fiscal pair those two would make.
Mm.
I mean,
I have made,
and I think that New Zealanders are probably. I think generally as Kiwis we love MMP, but I think it lets us down in a couple of areas, and I think probably ACT much more than Mana, but this week has shown a couple of the failings of MMP, to be honest. I mean Don Brash has never won a seat. Don Brash lost an election. And now he's bullying his way into a position where he may well be able to force John Key to give him finance, which of course is what John Key and Bill English probably don't want. But they may have to do that.
Mm.
Of course, there's another interesting angle to this whole thing, of course, and which I don't think the media has really put quite enough focus on this week, and that's, you know, what does Labour think? Phil Goff has obviously said no, he's not prepared to work with Hone Haruere in any way at all. That's a sensible position for any centrist party to take, I suppose. As far as the shift on the right goes, this is really interesting for me. We are a nation of centrists, and our elections are generally decided by the swing in the centre. So although we like to think of ourselves as loyal to our brands of politics, in fact, there's a lot of people in the centre who'll vote national one election and Labour the next. And frankly, I think that this coalition on the right is the sort of strengthening of power on the right is quite frightening for a lot of centrist people. I think there's a lot of centre people in New Zealand who may well have voted national in the last election, who are just not going to be interested in having Don Brash and his divisive policies. I mean, economically, you can analyse Don Brash's policies till the cows come home, but you can't divorce them from the fact that socially they will wreck hundreds of years of careful social progress.
But it's interesting, you know, how far is Don Brash different from the National Party? How far do the National Party sort of use his position to make themselves seem centrist? Because that's the other thing that seems to be happening.
Yeah. I think John Key's in something of an invidious position, quite frankly, because ACT is either going to be friend or foe, and I don't really think John Key knows. There's been some comment that John Key and National have manipulated the situation and opened the door deliberately for Don Brash because he would be a much better coalition partner than Rodney Hyde.
Mm. Or even a much better foe than Rodney Hyde.
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, if Rodney was to lose Epsom and not get ACT in at all, that would have left National in a precarious position.
Mm.
Of course, the one thing nobody's talked about is the possibility that ACT has now turned itself into too much of a fiscally driven right-wing party, and in fact it's going to alienate so many people that John Key turns to the Māori Party and says, hey, be my official coalition partner as opposed to the guest.
Do you think there's a chance of that?
I don't know. It'll be an interesting and unusual move, but ACT is not, in fact, John Key's only option for a coalition.
Right. Okay. And of course, that's interesting because I always see that the ACT Party and the National Party, or that kind of neoliberal stance that the National Party has, you know, plays off ACT for its own benefit. So although they seem to be in opposition to them, in a sense, they're also adopting ACT measures or measures that would be really popular with ACT, but positioning themselves as more mainstream in the process.
Well, I think that's true to a degree, Sharon. Yeah, absolutely. They Yeah, they do. They hide behind the policies of the other parties while quietly implementing them, don't they?
Mm, mm, yeah. Definitely.
But, yeah, I guess it's just been, I think, from National's point of view, a reasonably successful experiment to have the Maori Party in coalition with no need to have them in there. That's, you know, they needed ACT, they formed a coalition, and then, I, in my view, to silence the Maori Party as much as anything, they invited them into government. Peter Schappels has been very clear this week that he would much rather be at the table fighting Don Brash than outside Parliament, you know, lobbing metaphorical
grenades.
Okay, so
you think there might be another shift there that we...
Well, Hone Hadawira has said very publicly that he will never deal with Don Brash, and they do come from completely different places. Don Brash is an incredibly confident politician, considering that he holds what's a very minority view in this country. Yeah.
And so is Roger Douglas, in a way. It's quite interesting. Number of people that slag him off and the policies that he brought to New Zealand and implemented while he was in the Labour Party, and yet he gets back into government. It's quite astonishing.
This is what I mean by, I think this week will have highlighted for New Zealanders some of the failings of MMP.
Mm.
I think we love it because it's proportional in a way that first past the post never was, and I think we're a deeply multi-sectored society and we value that ability to represent that kaleidoscope of politics and cultures in Parliament, which is wonderful. But it comes with a couple of fishhooks, and that's that sometimes people like Don Brash can use it to bully their way back into Parliament.
Mm-hmm. So moving on to our local Waiheke that we love so much.
Yeah.
Anything in there that in the Gulf News that you think is quite interesting?
To be honest, I haven't read it that closely this week. I've been kind of busy at work. But
I'd like to get your views on the marina.
Yeah, well, the marina is an interesting one, isn't it? It's been on and off the cards for years under the radar, to be honest. It's not the first time anybody's suggested having a marina on Waiheke. My personal views on the marina are that Matiete is just too nice.
Mm.
I can't get over that. I came here, you know, 16 years ago, and I look back now, and the community's been to hell and back over Matiete, and it is, and that's the price we paid for retaining an empty, meditative... All right, too many cars. Yes, too many cars are parked at Matiete, but ultimately, it's a, I don't know, it's always felt like a place to me where Waiheke people have a few minutes to reconnect with the island, coming home, or a quiet moment to leave it. And
will a marina necessarily change that?
It's a good question. Look, first I'll put my cards on the table. I'm a yachty.
Mm.
I've got a keeler, albeit a small and slightly it's a sad one. But it's so I'm not anti yachts and I'm not anti marinas. But the facilities on the island for boaties are pretty tragic, to be honest, and it would improve those. But I suspect, and I think other people do too, that it's just going to become a boat park for Aucklanders. It's going to be a much cheaper marina than West Haven or Okahu Bay or West Park or the others on the Gulf.
So people might just get the ferry over.
Oh, absolutely.
Park
their boat
here.
I think it's for locals. I think that's a mistake.
Right,
potentially a mistake. We're going to find that it's a boat park for Aucklanders who come out on the ferry on Friday night and take their boat out. I mean, it's halfway to Barrier. Well, not halfway, but you know what I mean. It's a good start to Barrier from Auckland.
Especially if you're up the harbour and you have to come down again.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I guess some of the more well-heeled island yachties will have a berth, but I imagine a lot of them will be, if you like, overseas investors. And I don't know if that's providing for the island or not.
Mm. I mean, for me, I just noticed going into Half Moon Bay, if you go into Half Moon Bay on a Saturday, the traffic is just huge. And I'm just thinking, you know, the summer with this year, some of those boats were really full. Some of the ferry boats were really full.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, a second boat behind them. Each boat is disgorging like 600 people. Or, you know, when they're at capacity. And then you've got all these little boats trying to, you know, steer either through wind or, through quite a small channel, really.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's sort of, you know, it's a recipe for disaster, but, you know, you wouldn't want to wish that on anyone.
No, and I think, to be honest, it's a little early to prejudge along those lines because... this is not going to be a Half Moon Bay marina. This is not going to be a large marina. This is going to be a small marina. As far as marinas go, it's going to be very small.
Right.
So traffic issues at Half Moon Bay aren't that relevant to us here. I think the bay itself has probably got the capacity.
Oh, you do?
Well, okay. I do, to be honest. Yeah, mm. I do. But I've long been somebody who advocates leaving Matiatia as it is.
Mm.
But I think we have to be sensible about the argument and look closely at the proposal.
Let me offer a
devil's advocate view, if you like. There is a view that says not upgrading facilities is bad for the environment. We do have a lot of boaties on the island with yachts that are too small to have a serious holding tank. Pump out facilities at Matiatia as a gateway to the rest of the Hauraki Gulf environmentally could be a good idea. And a marina would provide those facilities. We do have a lot of visiting boats, and they do dump their shit in the harbour. And I'm constantly nagging Fullers and blaming Fullers for still dumping their holding tanks in the harbour when there are pump-out facilities in Auckland. So there's a kind of hypocrisy that Waiheke sometimes gets accused of. Now, I don't want to suddenly sound like I'm for this marina, but I just think that there's an argument that upgrading facilities is good for the environment, and if we're not looking 50 to 100 years ahead, we're stupid.
And what about the location? Could we talk about another location that would be suitable? Actually, I mean, it's nice to talk to someone who knows something about boats.
Well, actually, strangely enough, I was talking with a friend just the other day, and he was proposing the mangrove area over the road from the transfer station. So if you, as you drive down with the supermarket on your left and you go past Calais Terrace, immediately on your right there's a very large and silted up area of mangroves in Anzac Bay. It's the Tawaiparera wetland, which was filled in many, many years ago by the Waiheke County Council. In fact, the County Council used much of it as an illegal, unapproved tip site. And there are, I don't know about dozens, but there's certainly several car bodies and all sorts of nasty stuff under there. So this is all under the skate park and under the transfer station in that area.
That area is filled in?
Well, part of it.
Okay.
Not where the transfer station itself sits, I believe, but the area where the skate park is.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was filled in over an old Waiheke County tip.
Mm.
The tip itself was fairly poisonous and awful, as I understand it. I'm open to the other side that it would be environmentally unsound there. But I think it's not a bad option.
Mm. it would be clearing some of those mangroves.
Yeah, it would need deep dredge. Yeah, it would need a deep dredge. But in some ways, up Putuki Bay might be a better place than Matiatia.
Oh, interesting.
It would seem to me to be enhancing that area to some degree, whereas I think Matiatia would be in, what's the opposite of enhancement?
And it's already a kind of an industrial zone.
Well, exactly. And it's a stone throw from the marine shops.
Mm. The other thing that this whole issue of Matiatia being a transport hub, and we're still holding out for a transport plan, and I think if they actually developed a proper transport plan for Matiatia, that would also make it clear whether a marina fitted in with that or not. But at the moment, this proposal that all these boats are then going to have a place to park a car as well just seems quite bizarre, given the fact that they're taking away commuter parking, or parking that would be used much more regularly than parking that's assigned to boats in a marina.
I think that's a strong argument.
Interesting. Okay, anything else that...
What's going around the island at the moment, apart from bad weather?
Yeah, I know, we're due in winter, eh? You forget what winter is like, and I mean, it is it's nice we don't have to think about the water going in the water tanks, but, I mean, some of it can seem a bit grim.
Yeah, it can. It's about this time of year you start recognising Waiheke people in Queen Street, because they've got that little splatter of mud up the back of their jeans.
And
they're from Waiheke because they've had to cross the Matiatia car park at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So Waiheke mud. In fact, my wife Fleur was just saying yesterday that we've had 3 or 4 extremely dry summers on the island, and this is the first time we've had a bit of damp summer and autumn for a few years. And at last, she was celebrating the return of Waiheke mud.
No, great. Okay, well, lovely. Thanks very much for coming. Was there something else that you wanted to talk about?
No, that's fine. I can talk all day, but I won't.
I see the Gulf News is leading with the editorial is
on the Esplanade.
Esplanade.
How did the Esplanade manage to turn itself into this lingering, festering issue?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, look, and I feel quite strongly on it, and I'm going to plant myself firmly in the I wish it was open sector of the community. I really understand Blackpool people and Surfdale people wanting it closed. If I lived in Blackpool and Surfdale, I mean, it is a NIMBY issue, isn't it? Mm. It really is a NIMBY issue. Mm. And I think that if I lived in Surfdale or Blackpool, then I would probably be quite happy to just see it turned into a walkway forever. But I don't. I live in Onatangi, and I have for many, many years, and I valued that opportunity to take a different way home if I was in that mood in my car. And it was a way, I mean, I'm just repeating things other people have said on this issue.
Well, I'm going to repeat things as well, because I have to say I do like it close. The thing that interests me about that stretch of road is the cost of upgrading it is phenomenal. So I don't understand why it can't just be kept as something which is, you know, in a state of repair, which is okay for walkers, but doesn't necessarily have the level of, infrastructural input that it would need to be a proper road.
Aside
from that, it's like, well, if we saved the money there, why couldn't Waiheke be responsible for then spending that money on another roading project or on something in the community? That's what annoys me a little bit about the way, you know, money is managed for Waiheke. It's like, well, we'll either, if we do this upgrade, it's going to cost this many millions, but if we don't do the upgrade, all this money will be used on some other project, probably not on Waiheke.
Absolutely.
And I think that's such a shame that we can't, you know, manage that bulk of money in things that would be potentially more useful, but well, for our island.
Well, how's this for a proposal?
Oh, yeah, go on.
Solve your issue, Shireen, and that's a visitor tax at KP.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you bring your car to the island, and I'd probably advocate quite a high tax, like $50.
Especially for trucks.
Yep. If you want to bring your car to the island and you don't have a residence permit, then it's $50 tax, and that money goes into a pool to look after the island's roads.
Mm. And to be honest, I think also the visitors that come in the summer, I mean, that whole thing about how much money we get into the local board dependent on our permanent population is just a shocker, given the volume of people we have to deal with over holiday periods.
Well, the volume of people at Matiati is an interesting issue at the moment. I see Gulf News reintroduced the wharf tax issue to the news agenda a couple or 3 weeks ago. And coincidentally, I had also just made an official information request on the wharf account, slightly expecting my immediate response from the council indicated that the new Auckland Council didn't know it had a wharf account.
Right. Interesting.
And I do understand that in the early part of the first term of the Auckland Council, they will be running around looking for things.
So where is the wharf account now? How is that money spent? Because money has been collected off all the tickets.
Yeah, money is collected at Matiati. I'm actually surprised by how few Waiheke people really are aware of this. I guess it's new arrivals to the island since the great wharf tax controversy of whenever it was, 2002, when every shop in Onoro Village had scrapped the wharf tax posters in their windows, and the island was quite motivated on this issue. And it's been an issue that Gulf News has chased for many years now, and to Liz Waters' credit, she doesn't let that one go, and I don't think she ever should. The wharf tax is insidious, it's not fair. We and our visitors pay outrageous amounts of money into some black hole in Auckland City, which is then spent on wharves all around the Hauraki Gulf. So basically, Waiheke and its visitors are funding the wharf infrastructure on islands we never visit. I mean, when did you last go to Kawau? It just doesn't seem. And the information I got from the council under the Official Information Act was that they're taking between $1.4 and $1.7 million a year. The Local Government Act, God bless it, stops the council spending money in areas that they didn't take it. So, for example, if you take money in dog fees, in dog license fees, so if you have a dog, as I understand it, you need a license to operate a dog, and
you can't chop the trees down.
Yeah, and that money goes can't be spent on footpaths.
Right.
It's considered a targeted levy, specifically at dog owners, to be spent in the area of dog ownership.
Mm.
Well, the same thing applies with wharves.
Mm.
So you can't take money at the wharf and spend it, unfortunately, on other infrastructure on Waiheke, which frankly would make sense to me, because if there's one place we can levy our visitors at the to account for some of the environmental impact that they bring with them, then I think a levy at the wharf would make sense.
So what's the way forward on that issue? Because it is wrong that, you know, other services are subsidised and are not paying a wharf charge. We're not subsidised, so our ticket prices are already high on the ferries, and we're paying a wharf charge.
And we pay a wharf tax at both ends. So we pay $1.02 for a return trip at Maitea, and I think it's 82 cents at Auckland. So every time, I don't know how many Waiheke people are aware of this, but every time they walk across the wharf, Auckland Council charges them 51 cents for the privilege. Now, I don't know when I last did 51 cents of damage to the concrete at the wharf. The Waiheke County Council, the Waiheke County Council in the local body amalgamation of 1989 handed over a very healthy wharf account, thank you very much, to Auckland City. It had something like 900 grand in it when Auckland City took over Waiheke. And the new wharf was built mostly with that money. So effectively, the argument goes Waiheke paid for its own wharf, and we're still paying for it again and again and again.
So what's the story with that? What's the solution to this whole
thing? I think we have to fight to scrap the wharf tax.
Right. Okay.
I don't see why the Gulf wharves are all over the Hauraki Gulf. The Gulf wharves are the responsibility of Waiheke people, and I think that the whole Auckland region should pay for the wharves in the Hauraki Gulf.
Mm.
And I mean it's ridiculous. We don't. Will we pay our share?
So, any activists out there who feel like they're not doing enough, or have got a bit of spare time,
I would love to see the wharf tax back on the political agenda for Waiheke, and I think that this would be a good thing to challenge this community board, this local board, with. I haven't heard them say anything about the wharf tax since they were elected to power, and I think they're avoiding the issue. And I challenge them here to get into that issue and stop that iniquitous tax on Waiheke people.
Hear, hear. Yeah. Excellent. Good. Okay. Well, actually, can I just ask you about completely off left field, but just because of your journalist background, this stuff on Bin Laden, what do you make of that? Would that be okay to ask you or not really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love the Bin Laden story.
It's great, isn't it?
It's just outrageous. And you see this morning's paper announces
I didn't
that
see it.
There's now already a video game about to be released where you can go and kill Bin Laden,
hasn't that already been done?
I think not with his image. But,
okay.
And they're picking Kiefer Sutherland as the dude in the image to go and find Bin Laden.
Right,
and
okay.
Well, what do I think? I think that Hone Haruera made some interesting comments that were taken too seriously, to be honest, but I think New Zealanders do react like that. To those sorts of comments. So I think Hone did.
What did he say? I don't know.
Hone Haruera said on Māori TV first and then Te Karere on TVNZ that Osama bin Laden fought for his people and their freedom, and that it was the Māori way to honour the dead, not condemn them, and he wanted to farewell him with some honour. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, and I apologise if I haven't got it exactly right, but that's basically what he said. And he came in for a lot of flack, of course, because that even Julian, he said it in Māori on Māori TV, and although I didn't quite understand what he was saying, Julian Wilcox, the interviewer, said in English, you do know that that mihi is going to be interpreted in many different ways across this nation. And Hone kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, well, so be it. But then he repeated himself on Te Karere, and the subtitles used by the media, he had to come out yesterday, I think it was, and apologize and say that he got it wrong and that his comments were counter to the way most people would feel. There are some very interesting pieces in the media on this whole Bin Laden thing. I think that Hone Haruera, while you might sympathize with his perspective, has missed the mark on this one.
That's interesting.
Many people in Māoridom, including Professor Ranganui Walker, echoed these sentiments. And I think that we have to allow them. I think what Pākehā New Zealand forget so often is that we you know, there is still plenty of Indigenous activism, as there should be in this country.
And also irritation at the way, you know, things... I mean, I always think it's that's the one thing that worries me about Don Brash. It's that whole thing of, you know, things are getting a bit boring, or, you know, let's stir it up with the Maori. And I think, you know, playing that race card when it's convenient to you, as he has a couple of times, is really not a thing to do in a stable democracy where, yes, there are some issues around Maori feeling disenfranchised, rightfully so in some areas. But that's not the same as, you know, inciting people against each other. And I think that's what really, really, really worries me about the ACT Party.
Well, this is why I think that having Don Brash... And the idea of John Banks as the member for Epsom.
Oh, God.
So John Banks and Epsom.
Sorry.
Don Brash as finance minister and Roger Douglas behind pulling the strings is an absolutely frightening thought. I think this is what may, in fact, work okay for the centre-left. I think that, one thing you can't have in this country is people like Don Brash unilaterally advocating unilaterally for the abolition of the Maori seats. Now the abolition of the Maori seats is a decision for Maori.
Mm.
And if they decide in 50 to 100 years from now that they don't need that Indigenous position in Parliament, that's their call, in my view. That is not Don Brash's call. And I think that the idea... I mean, I think most New Zealanders would agree that the Maori seats in some ways has provided infrastructural... stability in New Zealand government, and we've worked too hard over 160 years, you know, to maintain a relatively harmonious relationship between different cultures in this country. And for somebody like Don Brash just to walk in and say, "Oh no, we'll scrap the Maori seats," you know,
and like to sort hell. Of, yeah. No, I totally agree. And on a separate note, I don't know if you follow Tumiki. But
I do sometimes, but right. I didn't read them this week.
Okay, well, no, Tumiki this week has apparently got a photo of, you know, the Campbell soup tins,
yes.
But with Bin Laden on them, which I think is great, because I think it is that. It's that, you know, this
he's,
iconography.
He's become a cultural icon, hasn't
he? Yeah.
And I suppose we can assume he's dead.
Well, yeah, if he was ever alive,
and also alive.
Maybe another video game could be, you know, when did he die? Because it seems to be, you know, it might have been 8 years ago, it might have been last week.
Yeah.
I watched Al Jazeera, and apparently the place that he was supposedly found is very near the Pakistan Military Academy, and anyone who lives in that area has to be vetted.
I read that, yes.
And so the guy was like, "I live right around there, everyone knows everyone else, and everyone's vetted, so how did this guy get into this house in this place in a building that's quite an expensive kind of building, and no one actually knows that he's in there?" It's quite bizarre.
The whole thing's bizarre. This
media circus. I love
it. It is kind of a
conspiracy
media
theorists come out now.
I believe me, they already are. They're all over the internet. Yeah. It's absolutely wonderful.
Anyway, Greg, thanks so much for coming in. I've wanted
pleasure.
To get you on for ages, so it's great that you you can find the time to come in.
No, my pleasure. And once again, you know, big ups to everybody at Waihi Radio.
Oh, thank you. Now I've got Nio in from the library, and Nio's here to talk to us about New Zealand Music Month and how the library is supporting that. Hi, Nio, how's it going?
Hi.
So, tell us. Oh,
what are you doing?
I'm not sure if I can hear you. Can you talk into it again?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, great. Lovely. So, tell us what's happening at the library for New Zealand Music Month.
Okay, so at the library this month, we love New Zealand Music Month. We love it a lot. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. I don't think it used to be in May. It used to be later on in the year, like October or something. But so May sort of jumped on us a bit because we had the New Zealand Book. We had the New Zealand Book Month as well earlier. But New Zealand Music Month is going great so far. We've put in a display, which is great. Lots of things there. And... the first performance we have this month is Doug Jerobine, and he's amazing. I looked him up on YouTube yesterday, and, well, the day before that, actually. And he blew me away, actually.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Really surprising. His music is just... Well, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of a combination of genres, you know. So yeah. For me, I thought it was a bit unexpected. It's like it was, if you just heard him and not seen him, you would have had a different impression on what he was playing, I thought. Because, I mean, he used to play sort of a bit more, I guess the term is acid rock, which I don't really understand what that means. But but then, because he grew up near sort of Dargaville, and then...
I think you need to be closer to the mic, because we're not hearing you very well.
Right, sorry.
So straight onto the mic, yeah,
like yep. That. Okay, so you can hear me now?
Oh, perfect, yeah.
Yep, sorry about that.
Sorry about that. We've had some problems with the desk, but I think it's sorted out now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so good. Perfect.
Oh, great. Okay. So Doug Jerobine, he grew up sort of near Dargaville, it's my understanding, and then he got quickly into the music scene. He described the guitar picking up him rather than the other way around, which I thought was a really nice way to talk about it. And then he sort of toured around the country a bit with some quite famous New Zealand musicians, I think Sir Howard Morrison and that sort of thing, and then he went to London and got into the scene over there. There were some rumours around Jimi Hendrix and all of that, but I don't know how much of that is actually true. He does actually have quite a similar style, which is interesting, but then he sort of gave that up and became a Hare Krishna, which I thought was interesting.
And I think that's really interesting because it shows through in his music as well.
It
he does some
yeah.
really amazing things. And doesn't he also play the sitar sometimes?
Yeah, I imagine that he sort of got into that round about that time when he got into the Hare Krishna and sort of more of his spiritual side. And he went to India and basically was a monk for about 10, 20 years, which is just amazing. I can't even imagine that experience, you know.
He's got a very interesting energy on stage, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a really, really quiet sort of presence.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting performer to watch, I think.
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday and he's a very calm person, you know, but very accepting. You could tell he would just flow with whatever happens today. It was really, really nice to talk to him. I'm really looking forward to him coming in. He's in at 11 o'clock this morning for half an hour. So if you are nearby, pop down, have a look, because I think it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. He does situate himself between Auckland and London now, so I imagine he does do the occasional performance over here, but it just seems amazing.
Mm, yeah. No, we're really lucky to have him because he's just
doing a podcast?
But isn't he, when's he, he's not playing, he's playing next week for the...
I think he does have another show on the island.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But he's playing tonight.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I don't know. I can ask him that today.
Yes. Yeah. So he's your first performer for New Zealand Music.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, because of all the problems with the desk, I missed the beginning of that. Okay, and I thought Sandy and Dion were coming in. Is that not this week?
They were, and then they pulled out at the last minute, unfortunately. So we're just so lucky that Doug was.
That's incredible.
On the island.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh no,
perfect.
That'll be a real, real treat. So definitely try and get down to the library for 11. Are they playing outside or they're playing inside from now on?
Who we're playing inside, but you know we might just see how it goes if the weather's nice and we've got a power cable, we might mix it up. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know that in the past it's been so cramped inside.
Yeah.
And then you get the reverb and you get lots of people and it just
it
does
sound
nicer.
It is quite a small space.
Mm, mm.
Yeah. But it's quite intimate as well, which is quite nice.
Mm. So who else have you got playing for New Zealand Music Month?
So next Saturday, 14th of May, we've got the V12 Men's Choir.
Oh, great.
So they should be really good.
Mm.
They're at 3 p.m, which is most of the sessions are at 11. So that just note that 3 p.m.
Mm.
And we do close the library at 4, so we'll see how that goes. And then the next performance we have on the 21st of May is the Canto Isola. I think that's the Waiheke School Choir.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're quite incredible
they
as well.
They sound good, yeah. Mm. So I'm looking forward to that. And then on the 28th of May, our final performance is by Little Sister.
Okay, I don't know them. Or maybe I do.
The only thing I know about them, it sounds terrible, is that I think they do an a cappella.
Okay.
So I'm sure it would be great.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's because I'm
so in a sense, it's all a cappella, isn't it? Because the men's choir is as well.
Yeah, I guess so.
And the girls from the high school, the Bella Isola.
Canto Isola.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like a great lineup and a great event to support. So you're doing other things at the library for New Zealand Music Month?
For the New Zealand Music Month, not really much else other than the fact that we've got a bit of a display in there. And so there's some New Zealand music that we're playing in the library as well, just whatever we've got on hand. We're welcome to take requests as well. There's some books and that sort of thing, you know, the usual sort of things you find in the library. We've got a couple of other displays in the library as well. For the teens, we've got a vampire display at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Is that
in connection with something that's happening on TV? Or
There was an article in one of the, I think it's called Good Reading. It's a magazine for book lovers. And there was an article in that for vampire fiction, because everybody seems to love it, you know. I mean, it is a bit of a fad at the moment, but it has been going on for a little while. So we put together a teen vampire book display instead of adult vampire books, because they are a little bit different, tend to be set in high schools and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, everybody loves them anyway.
What's the story with vampire fiction? I never get it. I so don't get it. What's the attraction?
I think there's a lot of sort of different things going on there, you know. It's sort of the, I think it's the intense, passionate relationship as well between the characters, because they do tend to have a very intense relationship, and there's that sort of, you know, it's like the one, you've found the one, you know, and if you're going to become a vampire or what, you're obviously going to share the rest of your life with that person. So it's sort of like this ideal world that doesn't actually exist, but we all sort of reach out to it and would like it to exist. So, you know, getting lost in a book about, you know, and this sort of otherworldly thing going on as well, you know, sort of, I think we've all had that moment when you've been walking along a dark street and you've heard a noise and you've thought, wow, you know, this is the time that if there were vampires or werewolves or anything, this is when they would attack me.
Yeah.
You know, so you have those moments sometimes.
Well, I think I'm sold. I might try and get hold of one.
Yeah, there's lots there.
Yeah. So any particular authors you'd recommend?
I mean, you know, try the Twilight series if you haven't tried them.
Yes, I've heard of them. Yeah,
they're very popular, and not just with teens, definitely with adults as well. They're quite tomes of books, actually, quite large. What's quite good is that I've put together a display with quite a variety of vampire style books. There's a vampire pirate book, and I've grabbed up some old Buffy the Vampire Slayer graphic novels, and you know, the old school movie, the one that it was set on before the TV series. Yeah, because I liked that when it came out. And what I like is when vampire books put a slightly different spin on the vampire myth, you know, change things up a little bit. So I just recently read the first book in the Vampire Academy series, which is a teen book. It's very, very popular. You'll have to place a hold on it, I'm sorry. You will. I think there's quite a few books in that series. I've only read the first one. But what was interesting about that is that it had sort of a different play on. There was the vampire, but they were like the good guys. And then there were the bad vampires. They were the ones that drank human blood.
Right, okay, you know? Good vampires, so, and bad vampires.
I know, it sounds a bit funny. And then there were vampire just slightly, protectors. Yes. And, I don't know, you'd have to read it. But
okay, it almost sounds like you're getting into a game zone, doesn't it? You've got your vampires and your good vampires, and then your vampire protectors, and
Yeah, I think you could make a video game out of this one.
Oh, no, excellent. Great, lovely. And any new books you'd like to talk about that you've seen come in? I mean, I know that you didn't come in with that brief, but anything that's...
No, I thought about bringing in some books, but the only ones I've been reading at the moment really have been those vampire books. So I didn't really bring anything in. Oh, we do have a really cool book. It's not new, but it's really cool, because we've got a Fair Trade display up at the moment for Fair Trade Fortnight, which is the next 2 weeks.
Okay, yep.
Starting today. So that's cool. We've got a display there with products from the organic shop in Tahi Road, Waiheke food shop, I think.
Mm, the organic shop in Tahi Road,
And so there's heaps of stuff there. But the book that I really love there is the Fair Trade Cookbook.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of those. They're quite amazing. Yeah.
It's real feel-good stuff.
And some of that stuff is really, you know, it's because they've got recipes, I don't know about these particular books, but because they've got recipes from all over the world, you can get some really nice, I don't know, like Aztec recipes with chocolate or, you know, things with, you know, coconut or just different kinds of ingredients.
Yeah. I think there's that sort of feeling about putting food together that you can't feel bad about, which is really nice.
Yeah. And I have to say the fair trade dried mango is my current favourite. Very nice. I don't know if you have some of that, but you know, definitely a must have.
Definitely some dried papaya, I think.
Yes, that's quite nice as well. And the dried guava is quite good too. And I always get their fair trade coffee.
Yeah, I love their mocha chocolate.
Oh, really?
That's really
good. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's just on display, is that right?
That's right, yes. Right. But you can buy it at the Waiheke Organic Food Shop.
Okay, so. Fair enough. So get yourselves down to the Waiheke Organic Food Shop to get some of that.
Yeah.
And see what you can get at the library. Lovely, great. Okay, well, Naya, thanks so much for coming in to tell us about the Library Waiheke Music Month, or the New Zealand Music Month at the library, and today it's David Jerabine, who's an amazing...
Doug Jerabine.
Oh, sorry, Doug Jerabine, who's an amazing guitarist. I've seen him play. He's absolutely lovely, and he's playing at 11. How long do these things go on for?
It's going to be half an hour today.
Okay, lovely, great. Okay, well, enjoy. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to the interviews from last week's Island Life. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. We bring it to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with the interviews replayed on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. or they're available as a podcast at www.waihekeradio.org.nz.